And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, we haven't talked about local politics in a while, but it seems to me that what's going on in Lackawanna County, Scranton, with the Democratic Party is like a poster for everything wrong with the Democratic Party nationally. You're intimately connected with what's going on. Give us a rundown of what's happening.
Oh, it's a cluster, you know what. I mean, if you think things in Washington are bad, it's at a different scale, but it's still important because, as you know, we've been saying grassroots and politics is local, and the Democrats are engaged in self-defeating actions. Quick recap. A couple of weeks ago, one of the newly elected county commissioners, they've only been in office 14 months, Matt McGloin, indicated that he was going to resign the Democratic majority to take a job. Well, he didn't tell us what the job was, but the rumors knew correctly, to be the offensive coordinator at Boston College for football.
This guy's a football star, right?
Yeah, he was a former quarterback at Penn State, holds a number of Penn State records, played in the NFL, and came back and wanted to start a political career. So he indicated that as of last Monday, he was going to resign and tendered a resignation. Lo and behold, let me just recap also. The procedure in Lackawanna County when a county commissioner resigns is that the party to whom he or she belonged would nominate or place three names out there, and the court, the judges of the Lackawanna County Court, would pick one of those to fill in the vacancy until the next general election. And it hasn't happened often, but it has happened. And traditionally, it's usually made known behind the scenes which one they want, and then the other two are just sort of placeholders. In this instance, the remaining county commissioner, Bill Gaughan, came out and said, I want Matt McGloin to be replaced by Max Conway, who's the mayor of Dunmore, and who has a pretty good, he's a young guy with a reputation for action. Lo and behold, the powers that be in the Democratic Party, the county chairman and the sitting state senator, were saying, not so fast. We have our own boys, or boys club that we want to have filled. And the county party executive committee held a session. 18 people put their names in. The three names came out, one of whom supposedly was the one they want, Brenda Sacco, who happened to have been fired by the current county commissioners as the head of economic development.
And the current county commissioners, the majority, are Democrats, right? They're two Democrats and one Republican. So the Democrats fired this woman that these Democrats now nominate.
Right. And they reportedly wanted to get rid of the county chairman, Chris Patrick, because in essence, they say he's doing nothing, and a lot of the rank and file agree. He hasn't led very well. Anyway, the state senator, Marty Flynn, who's aligned at this point with Chris Patrick, told the county commissioner, you shouldn't have any say in this, which is kind of startling because he's going to have to work with him. The county commissioner came back, Bill Gaughan, and said, you shouldn't have any say in this. You're not one who gets to pick. And besides, you don't even represent, your district is in Lackawanna County. You're half in Luzerne County.
A place where the Democratic Party is in complete disarray.
complete disarray, except Marty Flynn happens to have the Democratic part of Luzerne County.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, so they're fighting for power and who's going to do what. And there was even rumors behind the scene that whoever Flynn and Patrick picked would align themselves with the minority commissioner
in order to stifle,
in order to stifle Bill Gahn and his power.
Now, is there any policy involved here?
No.
No. Okay.
No. Right. It's just who gets to make the decisions.
Right.
Now, all of a sudden, 3 days after Matt McGloin tenders his resignation, he has a change of heart with regard to Boston College, and he says, well, there's some family considerations that I didn't take into account, and I'm resigning my position as offensive coordinator there. Which,
I mean, he didn't bother to talk to his wife. That's what it comes down to.
It seems that way.
Right.
Anyway, so what that leaves is that he is still county commissioner, but we don't know what he wants to do. And the county solicitor said he remains county solicitor, a county commissioner, until his resignation is accepted. So the question is he going to withdraw his resignation, or at the next county commissioners meeting, which is Wednesday, will they move to accept? And the deciding vote is his. It's Matt McGloin's.
Uh-huh.
There's one of two ways. Either there's a motion to... they'll ask for a motion because it's on the agenda, and probably Chris Chermak, the minority commissioner, will move to say, we accept. And then Bill Gahn will say, is there a second? Matt McGloin doesn't say anything, and Bill Gahn doesn't say anything. There's no second, so the motion fails, and he's still a county commissioner. Now, there may be a lawsuit over that saying, well, he resigned, but... the better law, from what I understand, is resignation is only as good as if it's accepted, or McGloin could withdraw it, and there might be a motion to accept his withdrawal of the motion, in which case we'll get two votes. We will know very soon, as soon as that there has to be a motion made, which way it goes as to what's going to happen and whether McGloin's going to stay on. Now Gahn would like to, I think, get rid of him at this point, but he doesn't have a choice if he wants to stay in power. And McGloin, if he has any hopes of a political career, needs to stick with it and try to make amends. He already has some problems in that the commissioners raised taxes 33%, and now they're going to be coming with a reassessment, which they didn't initiate, but it's going to come down on their watch. So we'll have to see.
So in a situation where the Democratic Party in Scranton, Lackawanna County, badly needs rejuvenating,
right,
you got this kind of nonsense. Basically
now,
nonsense. But it's not over, right? There's more.
No. Yeah, there's more. The city of Scranton. We have Paige Cognetti, who ran as an independent and won, and then became a Democrat. Her policies are Democratic.
And it's important to state that she's a young woman.
She's a young woman, and she defeated an old... after she won, they ran... it was to fill in a vacancy. The party, the city party, ran an old war horse, John Murray, who ran a really negative campaign, calling her a carpetbagger and whatever, but really there was sexism involved in it. And he got crushed in the election by Cognetti. Now, the word is that the city Democratic chairman and the city Democrats are trying to get rid of her, again, with some old boys. One is Gene Barrett, who was on city council 40 years ago.
So Gene Barrett, someplace in the 70s.
Yeah, ran the sewer authority at a time when it folded and had to get bought out. And then the city chairman, Bob Sheridan, who used to be on the school board, decided to throw his cap in the ring. And so there may be a three-way race for in the Democratic primary.
But the point is, it's the same thing. It's right. No rejuvenation. The existing party establishment wants to make sure that they die in office.
Right, and the party dies with
it. Yeah, exactly. Here's this young woman in her 40s who you've always said has done a pretty good job.
Right.
But she's not good enough for these old men.
No. Now, I've heard complaints about some of the things that she's done, but I don't think you can be in any office and not generate complaints. So that's our local story. There's also
Another local story, because you got your congressman Bresnahan, who just got elected, right? He beat Cartwright, yeah, who had been in
six term.
A lot of seniority, a lot of power. A lot of things he could have done, but he got beat. The guy had no...
In the wave. The wave beat him.
Yeah. He guy who came from nowhere, had no record, couldn't run against his record. He didn't have any record. And he claimed when he ran, I'm not cutting Medicaid, Medicare, or Social Security, right?
Right.
That was a big deal, right?
Yeah. These are big. With an elderly population in our area, these are very big.
Yeah. Yeah, and Scranton has an older population. Scranton's population is like Tampa's population. It's old people.
It's not just Scranton. It's the five counties.
That's true.
It's Pike and Wayne, which are very old. Monroe is a little bit younger, and parts of Luzerne, a good chunk of Luzerne, which is not young, are in there as well. Bresnahan's from Luzerne.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway... up comes a vote on the Republican budget, and the Republicans only have right now a 2-vote majority in the House. They are as thin as they could be. It's so thin that the Trump administration can't allow a vote to happen to confirm Stefanik.
At least Stefanik from New York, right.
At least Stefanik from New York as the UN ambassador, because if they do, and they lose, then it's 216 to 250. They're down to 1 vote, and what have you. So,
and in the House, there's no tie-breaking vote.
No.
It's not like the Senate, where the vice president, if there's a tie, casts the deciding vote. In the House, there's no such arrangement.
No, the speaker votes as a member of the House, yeah, 435.
Yeah, so if it's 216, the motion fails.
Right. So
they got 1 vote.
Yeah, because there's one Republican, there were a handful, 4 of them, who said they would never vote for the Republican budget, and 3 of them caved in. Supposedly, they held the vote open, and they went to the back room, and Trump got on the phone and yelled at some of these people, and they caved. But the one guy would not cave, and that's Thomas Massie, who's a real maverick from down in Kentucky. Word is he wants to run for Mitch McConnell's seat. We'll see. He wears I've been told, he wears, instead of a lapel pin, a little computer thing that updates the United States debt second by second. And he said he would not vote for anything. Now, this was not a vote on the budget. This was a vote to move this to the committees to come back with proposals to be put into the budget. However, the one committee that has jurisdiction over Medicaid was told, you have to cut $880 million somewhere. And Speaker Johnson said, well, we didn't tell that they don't have to cut Medicaid. They just have to cut $800 million. But where else can they get $880 million? Except
if they laid off every worker for the federal government, they would not get $880 million.
Right. So it's got to come down to Medicaid. And Medicaid is vital for rural hospitals. It's vital for some other nursing
homes. Excuse me. It's vital for every hospital. There's not a single hospital in America that will be able to continue if Medicaid disappeared.
Right. And Claire McCaskill... on Morning Joe explained also, the fact is, if people don't have Medicaid, they lose their insurance. If they go to an emergency room, the emergency room has to treat them, but they lose money. So how do they make that money up? They're going to have to raise the prices for the insurance companies that middle income people buy. So the middle income people are going to have to subsidize the loss of Medicaid on this stuff. So it's, you know, it's a lose-lose. Now, where this, what does this have to do with back to Brezhnev? Matt Cartwright, after he lost, seemed to indicate that he was going to be through with politics, but he is, you know, indicated, but I'll make my decision somewhere down the road. This week, he sent out a letter to many of his friends. I was one of them, who said, here's just a note to stay in touch while I consider whether I want to get back in the political arena. I think that the decision to get back in will be a lot easier for him if Brezhnev goes back on his word and votes with the Republicans and caves with the Republicans. And there's severe cuts to Medicaid, and it will also be Medicare and Social Security. That would make it a lot easier. Cartwright would still be the strongest candidate against Brezhnev. The Cook Report, I understand, Matt Cartwright told me, said that with him in the race, it's at least a toss-up. Without him, it's going to be a lean Republican district at a minimum. So we'll have to see how this thing plays out. We haven't heard any other names going for Congress. I mean, the only, I thought that McGloin might want to be going for Congress, but he can't resign again as county commissioner if he stays. That would be the end of his political career. You can't, keep running for a position and quitting on it. It would be a political suicide. So we'll have to see.
Well, in the meanwhile, the Republicans are doing what they do. And one of the things they do is lie about measles.
Yes.
If we have the tragic situation down in Texas where there's a measles epidemic. It really, I can't remember when there was a measles epidemic in my lifetime.
There was a few years ago among somebody came over in an airplane, and I think it was among like an Orthodox Jewish group who hadn't vaccinated. This epidemic is started in El Paso, Texas, which, by the way, under Texas law, people are allowed to opt out of these things for religious purposes, out of vaccinations. And it has one of the highest, if not the highest rate in Texas of opt-outs. And it's spread to New Mexico. And now I understand it's spread to New Jersey. Measles is highly, highly contagious. And it's a very serious disease. Already one child has died. Now, Bobby Kennedy Jr. was confronted with this at the White House cabinet meeting. And he lied and said, well, these epidemics happen all the time. Well, they don't. The last time was like 10 years ago. Back 20 or 25 years ago, there were no cases of measles in the United States because we had maintained such a high rate of vaccination. So we're seeing, this kind of denial of facts, denial of science. And like I've always said, it's not nice to fool Mother Nature.
Well, actually, you can't.
You can't.
You can only try, and you look foolish.
Yeah.
But this is not foolish. I mean, this is evil.
Way,
this is evil.
Yeah. By the way, there's another evil. There was supposed to be a committee meeting this week to determine what would go into next year's flu shots. If our audience doesn't know, the composition of flu shots changes from year to year based on an estimate as to which strain is going to be the dominant strain or strains. All of a sudden, that committee meeting got canceled. So there's no get together to decide on what the flu vaccines should consist of. And if there is no consensus, there may not be flu vaccines next year. This year's flu was a particularly a deadly strain. A lot of people, I don't know how many people actually got the shots. I know I did, my family did, but it was a virulent strain.
I was told by nurses working in hospital in New York that the hospital was filled to overflowing with flu patients.
Yes. Flu is a nasty disease. And so we're going to have to watch that. Because, you know, Bobby Kennedy kept saying, I'm not against vaccines, but he is against vaccines.
Of course he's against vaccines.
And he plays this word game. Well, I'm not, as long as they're proven safe and effective. But his definition of safe and effective is zero side effects, which is impossible. No vaccine, no medicine has zero side effects.
No human activity is 100%.
Yeah. Anything that you put in the body, either by vaccination, either by shot or by ingesting, has effect on the body.
Yeah.
So we're facing that type of thing out there. That's one of the things that happened this week. By the way, also this week, talk about canceling things. Our Secretary of Defense canceled, apparently, some a group that was monitoring Russian cyber activity against the United States.
Why would he do that?
That's a good question.
I mean, isn't it standard operating procedure for the Pentagon to make all kinds of plans, even for contingencies that they don't think will happen, just because it might happen?
Right, right. And maybe we ought to ask our Senator, Connecticut Dave Dave McCormick. You know, what's the, you know, he's voted for all these things after running on, a former West Pointer and, about honor and stuff like that. And there are, already activities to remind people about what McCormick is or isn't doing as a senator. That thing happened this week. But one of the problems, Jake, that we run into is how information gets to the public. And, we've been talking for years about these information silos, particularly on the right. This week, the Free Press took another hit when Jeff Bezos weighed in on the Washington Post and said, we're going to, change our editorial policy. Not only am I going to control, as the owner, the editorials, which owners have the prerogative to do, but we're only going to run columns that talk about personal liberties and free markets, and we're not going to talk about the other side. No, we're not going to have rebuttals or on the other hand columns. We're only going to push one way of thinking. Their motto used to be democracy dies in darkness. It's basically democracy just dies with Bezos.
Well, you remember what A.J. Liebling, the great media critic who wrote for The New Yorker for 30 years, one of his aphorisms said, freedom of the press is only for people who own a press.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, a lot of these, a lot of the right wingers, own the press.
That's right.
The Murdochs have been particularly, the Wall Street Journal and the New York Post have been all over Donald Trump on some of his policies, particularly on, foreign affairs. We don't know what's going to happen with the Murdoch press because the attempt to change the terms of the agreement that Rupert drew up for his four children the attempts to change were denied by the court. And so Lachlan, who's who Rupert wanted to run because he's a conservative may not have free reign. James may be challenging him, and James is supposedly a lot different on the political spectrum. We can only hope.
Well, the Wall Street Journal, of course, has been editorializing against the tariffs because the Wall Street Journal people know how to add, and they represent business. They talk to business people who understand how they set their prices. They know that if you have tariffs, it raises prices domestically. The Chinese people are not going to be paying these tariffs. Mexican people are not going to be paying these tariffs. The American people are going to be paying the tariffs, and that's bad for their profits. So they are against it. Well, and Trump, of course, he's apoplectic about it.
This is a parallel where I said, scientifically, it's not nice to fool Mother Nature. Economically, it's not nice to try to fool the laws of supply and demand and profits and losses. You can't say price isn't going to go up when you're adding to the costs. You can't do that. It doesn't work.
And Trump doesn't understand this stuff. It's not hard to understand.
It's hard to believe that he and I went to the same business school.
I don't think he went to graduate school. The Wharton that he went to was the Wharton undergraduate school.
Yeah, it is the undergraduate school. Yeah. But you still had to, in Wharton you had to take economics 101, although he may have taken economics at Fordham. I don't know. But he only transferred. He was only in Wharton for the last 2 years. But there's that quote from one of the professors at Wharton who said he was the dumbest SOB that he ever taught. What have you? The kids I went to Wharton with were no dummies. they were sharp kids. Matter of fact, they were so sharp that in those days you couldn't get into Wharton grad school because you already were taught most of what Wharton grad would teach you. Now it's all different because with entrepreneurship and the computers and all that stuff, there's all these different courses that the undergraduates don't get to take, but. Anyhow, that's a different thing.
We got a week coming up. There's going to be some court cases, I guess, that are going to be argued or decided about Musk's rampaging through the government. Yeah. We have to pay attention to that. Yeah, and Trump is going to give a speech, right?
He's going to give the speech to Congress. And of course, he's going to definitely give it in English because he just said it's the official language. He did that.
He can hardly utter an English sentence. If you read the actual transcript of what he says, it is not English. It cannot be parsed.
But it's repetitive, and he keeps it simple, and he keeps repeating over and over, and it's penetrating to those that he's targeting.
If it's not English, if it doesn't conform to the rules of grammar, maybe he's violating the new law that he passed, that English is the official language.
I still see my former high school English teachers every once in a while, and we talk about those things. So,
all right. Well, that's all for this week.
Oh, we also have Mardi Gras. There's nothing in New Orleans that can be wilder than what's happening in Washington.
Right. That's right.
The only thing missing in Washington are the beads.
Aside from that, Mardi Gras is not an English phrase.
That's true. The Fat Tuesday, I guess we'll have to call it.
Fat Tuesday, exactly.
And Trump will have to be back to see the lake
right.
instead of Mar-a-Lago. All right.
See you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.